So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 9, Text 32. Yadyayam kriyate bhakshyasta starhi mam khada purvatah na jivishye vinayena kshanam cha mrutakam yatha. Translation: without my husband, I cannot live for a moment. If you want to eat my husband, it would be better to eat me first. For without my husband, I am as good as a dead body. Purport. In the Vedic culture, there is a system known as Sati or Saha Marana, in which a woman dies with her husband. According to this system, if the husband dies, the wife will voluntarily die by falling in the blazing funeral pyre of her husband. Here in this verse, the feelings inherent in this culture are expressed by the wife of the Brahmana. A woman without a husband is like a dead body. Therefore, according to Vedic culture, a girl must be married. This is the responsibility of her father. A girl may be given in charity and a husband may have more than one wife, but a girl must be married. This is Vedic culture. A woman is supposed to be always dependent. In her childhood, she is dependent on her father, in youth on her husband, and in old age on her elderly sons. According to Manu Samhita, she is never independent. Independence for a woman means miserable life. In this age, so many girls are unmarried and falsely imagining themselves free, but their life is miserable. Here is an instance in which a woman felt that without her husband, she was nothing but a dead body. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. First of all, I would like to take blessings of all my godbrothers, senior godbrothers, so that not really qualified to sit here. The service I would like to do in a way that it pleases all of you. So this is a very interesting episode in the ninth canto. Just to give some background, this personality, Sudas, he's a king, but because of some dealings with Vasishtha Rishi, he was not aware of that so much, and he has been cursed to become a cannibal. Cannibal meaning man-eater. And he comes to the forest and he sees this Brahmana couple, a Brahmana and his wife, engaging in a union. And because of his cannibal instincts, he's a Rakshasa actually, he's just a demon. And because of his cannibal instincts, now he wants to eat this Brahmana. Their process of union is not even complete yet. But in the midst of all that, he just goes and grabs this Brahmana. Now this Saudas is very interesting. This Saudas king and this incident of him being a man-eater. Actually, those of you who attended His Grace Govind Prabhu's classes on Mahabharat mentioned a very interesting point that in scriptures there are always cross references. It's not that just one scripture explains the entire story. You know, different scripture will explain different phases of that same personality. The personality keeps appearing in different scriptures. Now about this Saudas, there are instances mentioned in Mahabharat. There are instances mentioned in Ramayana. There's an instance where Shatrughna goes to the hermitage of Valmiki Muni and he just takes a rest for 2 nights, and Valmiki Muni mentions the entire story of this Saudas. Because yeah, Saudas is a king, he's in the same dynasty of Lord Ramchandra, so he mentions the entire story to him. And then in Bhagavatam also this mention is given. I actually referred these stories a little bit in the scriptures, just superficial references. And a much more great detail and emphasis is given on the life that he spent as a cannibal, how he kept eating people and everything is not so happy. In Mahabharata, there's a mention of another Uttanka also. He's a disciple of Gautama Rishi, and how he manages to get to the abode of this Saudasa and grabs the earring of his wife and then takes it to his guru. And he defeats this Saudasa by logical reasoning and argument, because Saudasa wants to eat him also. In Valmiki Ramayana, there are instances how this Saudasa creates disturbance for Vasishtha Muni also. Vasishtha Muni is in the imminent separation of losing his grandson because of this cannibal, and that separation is explained. So different scriptures are explaining different viewpoints of the same personality. But the brilliance of Srimad Bhagavatam is that it is only extracting the part which is required for understanding the pure devotional service. You see this in the software industry, there is this terminology called as ETL, extraction, transformation and load. It's a very famous field nowadays, this ETL technology. So Bhagavatam is like that expert ETL, you know, it scans the whole thing. You will see this thing repeatedly appearing in Srimad Bhagavatam. It starts with some personality, Manu or someone. Then it goes on scanning. Okay, Manu's son is this one. Okay, this son is this one. This son is this one. His son is this one. His son is this one. Yes. This son does something very nice. And then he just extracts that. That whatever is that nice is mentioned nicely. And Srila Prabhupada is like an even superior ETL expert. And he elaborates on what is that so nice. I remembered one class of Mahananda Prabhu. Again, dynasties of kings. But then one king, he just spends whole night protecting the cows. And then he fights with the tiger and all that. You know, so it just stops there. It extracts that, explains to it, this is what is required for pure devotional service, then goes ahead, again scanning. Okay, this son, this son, this son, this son. Okay, this person. Okay, here's something important. Extracts that, again goes ahead. This son. It's such a beautiful, and it just explains that part which is required for pure devotional service. So similarly, it is going through all these kings in Ikshvaku dynasty. Now it has come on, halted itself on this particular king. Now he's a cannibal. What can you learn about pure devotional service from a cannibal? That's a question. But no. Then out of all the interactions that this cannibal had with different people in the forest, there's this one interaction that he had with this Brahmana. And then his wife is speaking for protecting her husband. And then Bhagavatam halts there. And he grabbed these few words which are spoken by this wife. So in getting knowledge, you know, revealing knowledge, this is one very amazing principle that keeps happening in the history of Vedic culture, that the source from which the knowledge is coming is given the highest importance. And the circumstances and the situation, they are actually given least importance. It's difficult for us to practice. We come here to get knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam, and in summer season and in situations, you know, we require AC. We require comfortable situation to grasp knowledge also. Nowadays, if you go to even classrooms, you know, there are situations where, you know, so I was just hearing this class of Govind Prabhu. You know, sometimes devotees are giving lecture and small children are running here and there. And it's like a disturbance. You know, the speaker feels disturbed. The children, the audience also feels disturbed. They can't grasp the knowledge so well. But he said, just imagine the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So we see, okay, Krishna is speaking and Arjuna is hearing. That is very nice. But what about all the horses? What about all the elephants? What about all the soldiers boasting about their own prestige? Then they were all doing their job when all this was going on. Not everybody was on that attention. So you can imagine just horses just moving their tails and elephants passing stool around. And all this is happening here right now. Will you be able to focus in? It's difficult. But he's focusing. And in that situation, the most intimate and the most confidential and the most highest knowledge is revealed. So circumstance is not such an important thing. And similarly in Srimad Bhagavatam also, the circumstance is very weird. You know, someone is about to die in 7 days. And, you know, he's sitting in rapt attention and everybody is coming. And then everybody is just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The situation is very awkward. And if you see this particular situation, it's so awkward. It is so, I mean, this Brahman couple is about to unite and a man-eating tiger, a man-eating Rakshasa just comes and grabs the husband even before the union is complete. And in that anxiety of separation from the husband, this wife is speaking something, but that is recorded by Vyasadeva as the important for pure devotional service. I mean, this is really commendable. The most commendable thing I felt was that how can this woman have so much of courage and so much of, you can imagine a lady, you know, in today's world, just imagine, you know, some couple goes to Borivali National Park and, you know, man-eating tiger comes and grabs the husband like that. You know, that will become a media news. It will just spread everywhere. You may have international pressures on India to, you know, take care of tigers and rules in going to Borivali National Park and everything. But this, and what can you expect from the lady to happen if her husband is grabbed like that? Probably she will just say, save me, you rascal, go away, such words. But this lady with such composure, she's speaking the highest Vedic truths. Just see the ability of this personality. So no doubt, Bhagavatam is recording whatever she's speaking. You see, in Mahabharata, in this wonderful episode of Yaksha, he was having that water and he was claiming the proprietorship over that water. And he asked the Pandavas to give answers to the question. Some of the questions which are asked in this whole episode, they are so amazing. They are so wonderful. So one of the questions which was asked by Yaksha, he asked Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, how a person becomes wise? How does one get wisdom? And what could be the answer of that? You know, he didn't say that by austerity. He did not say that by following regular Shastra studies. He said, no, one becomes wise by associating with another wise person. There's no other option. If you want to become wise in this life, and in Krishna consciousness, you know, just apart from being devotional, we also need a lot of wisdom. Otherwise, you may land up into so many problems. So you need wisdom. And how to get wisdom? The only way to get wisdom is by associating with another wise person. And we see this woman, whatever she's speaking is absolute wisdom. You know, if you see the shlokas before that, when she speaks to this Rakshasa, you know, she's first glorifying him. She's saying that, okay, you are from this dynasty. You are coming from a very great ancestorship. And this my Brahmana that you have grabbed is such a religious man. And this man can actually bring about the stability of Varna. She just speaks such wonderful wisdom here. And now at the end, she's expressing this thought that, okay, that, you know, if you at all want to eat him, please eat me first, because without him, I am simply like a dead body. And even that one sentence is such a wonderful wisdom. So Srila Prabhupada is commenting upon that. So for knowledge, it does not determine what is the situation. You know, the situation is, and the most amazing thing is after all this request that she makes, the Rakshasa still eats him. So in Shastra, you know, they lived happily ever after. That may not happen. You know, generally we are so accustomed to this idea of they lived happily. Something like this happening, you know, we just feel so intolerable. But this is Paramahamsa Samhita. You know, this is the people who are reaching up to 9th canto, they are prepared to bear this story also. So even in that awkward situation with a very sad so-called end, some very wonderful knowledge is being revealed. And then people are accepting that knowledge very nicely. And Srila Prabhupada is actually explaining the importance of whatever she is speaking. The first thing that Prabhupada speaks here in the purport, in the Vedic culture, there is a system known as sati or sahamarana, in which a woman dies with her husband. According to this system, if the husband dies, the wife will voluntarily die by falling in the blazing funeral pyre of her husband. So the most important word of this purport is voluntarily. And Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in his other speeches, other conversations, that the whole reason why this whole sati was stopped in India is because it was no more voluntary. People were actually forcing. And Prabhupada said, as soon as the force is there, then there is criminalism. Right? But then Srila Prabhupada mentions that, you know, first of all, what is important for us to know is, as the Kali Yuga progresses, you know, the ability of human beings to take austerities, to take troubles, it reduces. You know, you can't expect any person, what to speak of a woman, to enter into fire. I don't think in the city of Bombay, except the fire brigade staff, there is anybody who has this courage of entering into fire. Even a person having a Kshatriya mentality, you know, he will think twice. It's so difficult. You can't do like that. You know, and I don't know whether they also have the courage or not. They're doing as a job, definitely. I am nobody to comment on that. They're doing a noble profession. But I'm just saying that nobody has this courage. So you can't really force anybody to enter into fire and things like that. But Srila Prabhupada is explaining the principle. If you read the other purports, Srila Prabhupada explains. He explains that, of course, in Mahabharata, we know the story of Kunti and Madri also. After Maharaj Pandu left his body, then actually between Madri and Kunti, there was a competition that who will go Sati. So Madri was saying that I will go Sati. One thing is very sure, that if a woman is having a child, a son or a child, then she cannot go Sati. That is just, Vedic scripture doesn't allow it to happen. That is clear. So Pandavas were there, so somebody had to take care of them. There was a competition between Madri and Kunti that who will go Sati. Both were saying that I want to go Sati. So ultimately Madri said that, you know, Kunti, I have seen you and your ability of being a mother is far superior than my ability. Because your motherhood quality is so wonderful, and no doubt Krishna all the time in Bhagavad Gita keeps calling Arjuna as Kaunteya, and you know, and he refers to him that, you know, because you have that connection with Kunti, you know, I'm expecting certain things out of you. So no doubt, you know, this Kunti's quality of being a mother was excellent. And therefore Madhuri said, okay, I will go back and I will go Sati. And then in the chapter of even Gandhari, you know, Gandhari's husband was not a pure devotee, definitely. But even when Dhritarashtra, he ignited fire to his body, then Gandhari entered into his fire. And there Srila Prabhupada explains the principle of this Sati, and he mentions that the fire of separation that she was experiencing was the pain of actual fire was worse than the fire of separation that she was experiencing. So therefore she entered into the thing. So we have to first understand that this is a completely voluntary principle, and Srimad Bhagavatam is actually just like one of the wonderful job the Srimad Bhagavatam does. That, you know, yesterday Dwarkadish Prabhu spoke this class, that the glory of our scriptures is that they actually reveal the psychology of personalities, including the psychology of God. You know, nobody can do it. I remember one time Devamrita Prabhu was giving class here, and he was quoting this Stephen Hawking, famous scientist. And he writes in his book that I want to understand the mind of God. But you can't just, you know, understand the mind of God by making a resolution and being an armchair speculator. That's not possible. You know, Rupa Goswami could understand the mind of God because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him his full mercy. So these personalities who are actually understanding the mind of God, they are revealing. And throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually reveals the psychology of so many things. Just like I remember Anant Maharaj giving a class, and he mentioned that Shukadeva Goswami is revealing what is the psychology of frog also. That, you know, the frog, he is croaking and he thinks that actually he is a very good singer. Now, how can you look at a frog and say that, okay, he is thinking that he is a very good singer? It's not possible. You can't understand the psychology of you can't understand the psychology of a human being also, unless it actually reveals it to you. Right? But Srimad Bhagavatam reveals. How? Because they are pure personalities and they have controlled their mind and senses. And jitatmana prashantasya paramatma samahita. So one who has controlled his mind and senses has access to paramatma. And the same paramatma is there in the heart of a frog also. So paramatma is revealing to him what is the frog thinking. And he's putting it in the scripture for our benefit. See, the one quality of a human being which is very distinct from animals is that human being is supposed to be very sensitive. You know, that's a natural quality. A human being practices the process of vegetarianism or non-vegetarianism, because he understands, he's sensitive. He understands that if my finger is cut, I am feeling so much of pain, then obviously if somebody else's neck is cut, he must be going to have that pain. So it is just a question of being sensitive. It's not even compassion, so to speak. You know, compassion is a very high word. It's just being sensitive for other person's need. You know, I remember one time, and this quality comes from purity. One time I was sitting, I was hearing a class. I was in a Vaishnava's house. I was visited this Vaishnava's house, and we were hearing Srimad Bhagavatam on the tape, on the internet. And I kind of felt a little sleepy when this Bhagavatam was going on. Then this devotee's wife, she was so sharp. She just got up, and not immediately, after some time, after 5 minutes, she just got up, she went and she bought 2-3 glasses of water. And then she gave water to everybody, and then she gave water to me also. So she was so sensitive of this fact that this person is feeling sleepy, so I need to take care of sleep. But she didn't offend me. She didn't say that, hey, Prabhuji, please get up. And she didn't even directly get water for me also. But I could understand it, that this is for me to stay awake. So human being, you know, they are endowed with this quality of being sensitive. And devotees also are supposed to be very sensitive to what other person thinks. And one very great job that Srimad Bhagavatam does is helps us to be sensitive by revealing the psychology of personalities. You know, and here Srila Prabhupada says very nicely in this purport, Prabhupada says, here in this verse, the feeling inherent in this culture are expressed by the wife of this Brahmana. You know, so what is the psychology of a chaste woman, or what is the psychology of a woman actually, is very wonderfully revealed here. And what is that psychology? It says that she is saying, without my husband, I am as good as a dead body. This is the psychology of this chaste woman. She actually is feeling like this. So with this understanding, we can understand that the concept, the voluntary concept of sati, which was existing, it was not really a rule or a Vedic, you know, a kind of regulative principle. No. It was just a voluntary feeling. It was expressed by that particular behavior. That's all. And the people were sensitive enough to understand the feeling of that person. They were understanding, okay, you're doing this activity. I fully understand what you're going through. And that's why, you know, I'm not going to stop you from doing it. There was sensitiveness of understanding that what a person is going through. But now, how is this anyway connected to pure devotional service? You know, Srila Prabhupada gives, of course, in one of the purports, one point. He says that actually the husband and wife are supposed to be serving Lord Krishna together. They're actually serving Lord Krishna together. And because the wife is confident that my husband is serving Lord Krishna, therefore definitely he is going to a destination which is much superior than present situation. And you know, I want to accompany him to go to that destination and assist him in that service. And in that mood, actually, they would enter into that funeral pyre. And I'm not saying that we should do any of these things. But I'm just telling the concept and the sense. Because we have to be sensitive. We have to understand what was the emotion of that person. Without that, you'll just keep commenting on what's happening. So that's very important. But how to go to that level? How can a woman, she reach so much of level of chastity and that faith? And then Srila Prabhupada explains afterwards. Then he says, therefore, according to Vedic culture, a girl must be married. This is the responsibility of her father. He makes it very clear. That's not her own responsibility, but that is the responsibility of her father. And Srila Prabhupada, in other purports and other conversations, if you see, he mentions this word. You must have heard this word, kanyadan. You know, in the marriage, the process of kanyadan. So Srila Prabhupada explains there are two words in our Vedic culture. One is the kanyadan, and another is the kanyadaya. And he says, kanyadaya actually refers to the word daya in Sanskrit. Prabhupada says is like a legal bondage. So jivetayo mukti padesa daya bhak. That verse, you know, daya is a legal bondage. That means, it's very wonderful that Brahmaji is saying like this. It's like, if somebody practices this process, you know, tattenukampam sushamekshamano bhunjana evatmakrutam vipakam. One is tolerant to whatever happens in his life and accepts everything as Krishna's mercy and still remains faithful to him, remains his servant, then Krishna is legally bound to take you back to Godhead. You know, jiveta mukti pade sadaya bhag. That means there's a legal bondage. No, Krishna has to take you back to Godhead. It's a legal bondage. The word daya is used with a lot of deliberation and consideration. That's a legal bondage. So Prabhupada says, what is kanya daya? So he says there are these few words. There is matru runa, there is pitru runa, and there is kanya daya. So Prabhupada says that the matru runa and pitru runa, that means you have a debt. Being a father, I have a debt that I have to get my children married. Being a mother, I have a debt that I have to get my children married. But he said, debt meaning what? Means you can actually get away from it also. If you don't have money, if you're indebted, person says, okay, please give me my money because you owe this much money from me. You have a debt. But you say, I don't have this money, how can I give you? So you can just escape away from that. Or you can just declare yourself as bankrupt. You know, nowadays, if companies have a lot of loans and everything, they declare themselves as bankrupt. And the court says, okay, now all the creditors can take so much of money and then just close the matter. Your debt is gone, you're finished. Even if you're investing money, there's a clause there. You know, these investments are exposed to risk. That's your personal risk. You're giving money, but I may not be able to give you back everything. Right? So debt, you know, you can just raise hands and say, no, I'm sorry. But daya, Prabhupada says, is legal bondage. That means you have to do it. You can't escape the responsibility. So he says, in case of a daughter, a father has a daughter, you know, it is his responsibility that he has to get her married. And then the word is mentioned, kanyadan. So first is kanyadaya, that means his responsibility, and then kanyadan. So kanyadan means the dan, giving the wife, giving the daughter in marriage, it has to happen when she is a kanya. And Prabhupada says, 13 years of age, a woman enters into puberty. So before that, she is kanya. So therefore, the Vedic culture was that woman would get married at the age of 12 years only. And Prabhupada said that in Vedic culture, if a daughter is not married before 12 years of age, the father and the brother, elder brother, would have sleepless nights. That, you know, what will happen to my daughter? He said, but unfortunately, nowadays, the father himself says the daughter that, okay, now you find your own husband. That is the best thing for me. So that is just giving the responsibility. But Srila Prabhupada, he mentions a very nice thing. He said, why this concept existed in the Vedic culture? You know, why this getting married? It sounds awful, actually. When there's a conversation that is going on, and even Shyam Sundar Prabhu and Srila Prabhupada, and the first thing Shyam Sundar Prabhu asked, oh, Prabhupada, this is awful. And is it not spoiling the child? You're getting her married at 12 years of age. Then Prabhupada explains what is the psychology. Prabhupada says that as soon as a woman enters into 13, so therefore, you know, for wisdom, you have to go to wise people. So Srila Prabhupada explains this, that as soon as a woman is entering into her puberty, which is in today's terminology called as teenage, 13, so that from 13, so the teen starts, it continues till 19. Right? So this 13 to 19, that's a teenage. So this teenage, Prabhupada says, a woman starts developing very strong attraction towards opposite sex. She starts developing. At that time, if she has a psychological this, okay, I have a husband. She need not even meet him actually. But I have a husband. You know, it gives a lot of stability to that person. Lot of stability. Otherwise, what happens? Then otherwise, you keep choosing. Okay, maybe this person, maybe that person, maybe that person. And that conditioning of choosing, it becomes so strong that even after marriage, that conditioning continues. Now you may say, hey, what are you saying sitting there? No, it's not valid. How can you say like that? No, we have personal experiences. We are all staying in the outside world. We are working in the corporates. We can understand person's moves. You know? And not just that, it's not just my personal experience may be exposed to my personal interpretations. But one time, my good wife was explaining to me that she actually has a friend in Delhi. And this friend, girl, she's a Krishna conscious devotee. And because she's a devotee, people trust her. She's a nice lady. So people can trust her and they can have a healthy communication with her. So this lady, in a frustration, she was calling my wife and she was saying, you know, how do I counsel these people who are coming to me in my office? So she said, who are coming to you in office? So these four girls, And you know, these four girls, they come to me, they talk to me, they reveal their problems. So she said, okay, what are their problems? She said, all four of them have extramarital affairs. That means they are having affairs with somebody who already has a wife. That person already has a wife. And they did not know that. But in their efforts of, you know, having a good husband, you know, they landed up with something like that. So you can imagine, so we know the story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, right? He told the story of that how in the olden days, these people would think that, okay, if my daughter is having a son from a sadhu, then the son will be a very saintly person. And then they would call sadhu in their house. Then what would happen? Then the rogues and the thieves, they would take form of sadhus and they would try to enjoy the opportunity. So there is this psychology in the mind of somebody who is looking for a husband, but then there are so many rogues and thieves also waiting outside. And then what happens? You land up into complex situations. That person is landing into complex situation. His family is landing into complex situation. This girl is landing into complex situation. And there could be some other innocent men also who may fall victim to it. There could be so many innocent women who fall victim to it. And ultimately, you just have a society which is there's so much of complexity and so much of mess. And you can imagine a person who is going through all this, you know, having an extramarital affair, and then there's a complexity, and then there's a tension in the family, and then tension in society, how to hide this whole situation, and all thing. And then a person goes with a Bhagavad Gita in front of him. You know, he may accept Bhagavad Gita as a relief, but how long can he wholeheartedly take the principles and follow it? He's already in a mess. Even following Krishna, therefore these people, these girls, they're constantly going to her because they understand Krishna consciousness is important. They understand that they have to live a pure lifestyle, but they are landed in a situation where they can't come out of it. It's simply unfortunate on their part. Right? So basically, to save the society from such a degradation and to put society in a situation where, because see, in a conditioned state of human life, we actually require stability for practicing devotional service. Therefore, there's a varnashram system. Then there's an ashram. There is stability. Okay, you become a brahmachari. That means, okay, I want to be a brahmachari, I want to be in the ashram, so I don't have to deal with other things like marriage or anything like that. Okay, fine. So this is my, so I'm settled here. There's a stability. And okay, I have to be a grihastha, so I marry one particular lady, and you know, I have stay with her, and you know, this is my, so there's a stability, right? Once your physical needs are taken care of, once there is stability, then we can actually think of progressing in Krishna consciousness. If there is so much of problem in life, so much of complexity, you know, where is the question of somebody being as everything? You see, sometimes people, they don't even have a stable job. People keep shifting job every year. I met one person, one lady actually. I asked her, okay, how many years you have been in this IT industry? She said, I'm in the four years. So which job is this? She said, this is my fourth job. So in 1 year, already four jobs are changed. So if there is no satisfaction, there is no level of comfort, and you're constantly seeking of something better, something better, something better. In that unsteady life, you can't practice Krishna consciousness properly. You know, Srila Prabhupada, in one story, I was hearing this story, Prabhupada tells the story of this monkey. That this monkey, this carpenter was cutting the wood, and the monkey saw that the carpenter is cutting the wood. So he's a monkey. He's supposed to be a monkey. You know, be happy being a monkey. Why do you want to do a carpenter's job? But he wanted to do a carpenter's job because that's a better job. You know, that's something more challenging, more attractive. So what happened? He tried to remove this axe. And then his tail or something got trapped in that wood and he died there. Now in Gujarati, there's a saying, you know, Jenu kam tenu thai, bija kare so gota khai. So it means So Prabhupada says in that story, Prabhupada says that Krishna does not want you to do such things. Krishna does not want you to make adventures in life. That is not required. He says you first find out what you like to do. First you find out what you can do and do that sincerely. And Krishna is happy with that. Because that will give stability to you in your life. Okay, I can do this. I will do this. Just because something else is so adventurous and something so charming, I don't want to venture into that. Even within devotional circle, actually. Why? Because it gives so much of instability. And once you are unstable, then the first thing that the instability affects is your sadhana. Like recently one devotee revealed to me that he's setting up a new business. His whole 16 rounds, you know, is about how to set up the business. You know, who are my prospective clients, you know, who am I supposed to, and all 16 rounds are going like that. Now, of course, you know, a situational, you know, person situation. So just see, he's a devotee, practicing devotee for many years, but still, you know, you are not beyond the control of material nature. It's not possible. You know, devotees have a misunderstanding that we are transcendental. So therefore, in ISKCON, the word somebody is whimsical, he's known as transcendental, actually. So, honestly, somebody is very whimsical, we say, who is too transcendental. I mean, actually, he's whimsical. That means there is no stability. So a woman, a girl, she, you know, she's 13 years of age, she's developing that kind of attraction, but she says, okay, I have a husband, okay, why should I bother about it? Let me concentrate on this life. Okay, I have a husband. So that feeling that I have a husband gives so much of emotional and psychological stability for a woman that then she can practice the spiritual life very nicely. And when with that psychology, and Srila Prabhupada says that if that happens, you know, if that attraction happens at such an early stage, and then she remains like that, then she becomes a very chaste woman. Very highly likely that she will become a very chaste woman. So you can't create chastity overnight. That is not possible. So the culture is there, and the process is there, right? And then this is a process which is given. And even in this condition of desperateness, this lady is speaking something which is so high. And Srila Prabhupada is elaborating on that and is telling us that how we should understand that how we can remain stable in devotional life. That therefore, so Srila Prabhupada actually is you know, highlighting this point here. And another, so another thing which I saw in this pastime, and that I will just conclude the class after speaking that. So in this whole pastime, if you see, this Rakshasa is grabbing this Brahmana. But the entire talking is done by the wife only. The Brahmana doesn't speak anything. She speaks full wisdom. Now and the way she's describing her husband, you know, I'll just read out what she says. You are well known and worshipped. How dare you kill this Brahmana who is saintly? He's sinless person, well versed in Vedic knowledge. Killing him would be like destroying the embryo within the womb or killing a cow. Right? So he's a well-versed, he's intelligent, you know, he's very brilliant, but he doesn't do any speaking. He just keeps quiet. The wife does all the speaking. And this is one principle, and this point was very wonderfully brought out by His Grace Govind Prabhu in one of his classes, and I liked it so much. He said, consistently you see in Vedic culture, this thing is there. When somebody is targeted as a victim, generally that person keeps quiet. And the person who is on the side does all the speaking. You know, Bali Maharaj also. Bali Maharaj does not do any speaking when he was seized. His wife spoke, Prahlad Maharaj spoke, so many people spoke. But Bali Maharaj is quiet. And he is given a chance, then he speaks. But generally he is just quiet. And you see in the life of Lord Ramchandra. Lord Ramchandra was asked to leave everything and go to forest. He did not do any speaking. Lakshman was speaking. He was chastising people, he was arguing with them, he was fighting with, okay, this, that. The Vasishtha Muni is speaking, Lakshman is speaking, everybody is speaking, but Ramchandra is quiet. He's Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he keeps quiet. And you see in the, and so many instances, so see in the life of Rupa Goswami also. So this Digvijay Pandit, he challenged Rupa Goswami. He said, okay, I challenge you. So Rupa Goswami said, okay, I accept my defeat, given the sign. But then Jiva Goswami did all the talking. And he defeated him and he said, okay, if I can be so like, so you are so great. And then when that whole, when Jiva Goswami was targeted, he kept quiet. Right? And Sanatana Goswami had to come and do all the speaking. That okay, you know, you have to do, escape this little Jiva. And this is a consistent theme that is being followed. What do we understand from this? It's, of course, one thing is that a Vaishnava does not like to justify himself. You know, we definitely know that. But much deeper than that, and Govind Prabhu revealed this, he said that the principle of action and reaction is to be understood only for oneself and not for the other party. When somebody is going through suffering, then you should not think that, oh, that is his reaction. What can I do about it? He's going through the reaction. So some chastisement is going on. You know, you just can't say that, you know, okay, he deserves that reaction. He must have chastised somebody like that, so now he's being chastised. Or he must have killed somebody like that, so now he's being killed. He must have troubled somebody like that, so now he's being happening. So now, what can I do about it? No. The principle of reaction has to be understood for oneself. When you are targeted, you are the victim, you are undergoing through problems, then you think that, yes, I deserve this because I'm going through reaction. But the other party, he will try to defend you. So, in the principle of reaction, there is no escapism permitted in the Vedas. Otherwise, something is happening, okay, let them suffer. What can I do about it? You know, this massive earthquake took place. You know, we all know, right? I think tsunami. After tsunami, you know, somebody, I think, asked this to Guru Maharaj, Radha Swami Maharaj, and he said, okay, they are just deserving the due reaction. What can we do about it? No, we had an entire team of doctors in Bhaktivedanta Hospital set up and ready. And they went there and they served there. Okay, you are going through reaction, but as far as I am concerned, my duty is to help you in whichever way. If it means in words. If it means in action. If it means in prayers. But you just can't say that, okay, you know, I can't do anything about it. You have to defend. We see even in the case of Kamsa and Vasudeva, Devaki was quiet. Devaki is a very learned lady, she is a pure devotee. Her hair were grabbed, she was about to be killed. Vasudeva immediately took the chance, he did all the speaking, he released her. Right? So never in Vaishnava culture we should have a misunderstanding that the other person is going through problems and you can just sit quiet about it. Okay, that is his reaction, what can I do? So Chanakya Pandit says, you know, so that is the main. So Matruvat Paradarishu Paradraveshu Loshtravat Atmavat Sarvabhuteshu. And Yap Pashyati Sa Pandita, a real learned person, he considers others' wife as his mother, considers others' property as sand. So as far as the question of property and the wife is there, he just ignores them and neglects them, doesn't take any charge of that. But as far as the problems are concerned, he says, no, they're my problems also. Atmavat Sarva Bhuteshu. As far as wife, not that it's my wife also. Or not in my property also. They are fine. That is yours. I don't want thing. But the problems, yes, I want to share it. If I can do something for you, I will try to do it. Within my capacity. Nobody can stretch himself. But within your capacity. So this is the subtle principle that Vedas are constantly teaching us. And that Bhagavatam tells us. And I just want to conclude by saying that, you know, when we follow such principles of culture, then there is a stability in the devotion. And then the stability in the community also. And then the community can prosper together very nicely. So stability, in fact, is very important. So someone has to make sacrifice for that, for getting the stability. Some people will have to make sacrifice, but then overall stability is achieved. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Anybody has any questions or comments? Nobody? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nanta Koti Vaishnava Vrunda.